Hello and welcome to The Growth System. I'm Colin Shakespeare.
And I'm Chris Bayliss.
And today we're kicking things off with a topic that's bound to spark some lively debate in boardrooms and in Slack channels alike, MQLs. Yes, those three little letters that can so often create big problems. So we're asking a big question, do MQLs get a bad rap? And more importantly, do they deserve it? Are they the ticket, golden ticket to revenue growth? Or are they just a vanity metric that's leading us astray?
In this episode, we're going to peel back the layers of the MQL onion. We'll explore why these leads often feel like the front line of battle between sales and marketing. We'll dive into the dangers of making MQL volume your North Star, and we'll question the very foundation of how we measure MQL success in the B2B world.
Now, I can almost hear the collective groan from sales teams and the bristling of marketing managers, but stick with me because we're going to unpack this little acronym that's been the cause of so much friction in B2B companies. So MQLs, or to give them the Sunday name, marketing qualified leads, sound great on paper, but in practice, they often end up being the corporate equivalent of a sports day medal. Everyone gets one, but no one's quite sure of their value.
So over the course of the episode, we're going to unpack the problem with MQLs, and crucially, we're going to offer our thoughts on what to do about them. And we're going to do all of this through the lens of systems thinking.
So grab your favourite beverage, silence those Slack notifications, and get ready to dive into the messy, controversial, but also important world of MQLs.
So Colin, before we dive into MQLs, why don't we take a moment to talk about the plan for the podcast? So for anyone that missed the teaser or episode one last week, this might be episode two, but in many ways, it's episode one, as this is the first show in the format that we're going to be using for the majority of the rest of the season. So what we're going to do on this podcast is every week, we're going to pick a topic, an organizational issue or pattern of behavior that has its roots in systems theory. We're going to spend the first half of the show talking about the problems it causes, and then we're going to offer solutions as to how you can make these problems go away. And finally, we're going to wrap up with some personal outtakes from the show. Now, for anyone listening that missed last week and is thinking, systems theory, what's that got to do with growing a business? Well, we'd encourage you to go back and have a listen to episode one. It covers some big topics, but we've kept the episode short and hopefully to the point. And I hope it does a good job of connecting some of the dots that we're going to be talking about on the show.
Okay. Let's get on with the main part of the show then. I think it'd be useful to kick off by sort of defining our terms and just, I guess, answering the question, like, well, what actually is MQL? Or in other words, like, why are we having this conversation?
Well, as we'll come back to, I think what is an MQL is pretty much the heart of the issue. But let's take a step back from that for a second, maybe, and I'll do my best to kind of answer the question as asked. So yeah, in simple terms, an MQL, a marketing qualified lead, is a lifecycle stage in CRM system, nothing more than that. In theory, it sits alongside a load of other lifecycle stages, stuff like subscriber, SQL, opportunity, customer, you guys know the drill. What it does is tell the viewer how far along the sales cycle the record is. All so far so innocuous, but I guess where it all starts to get to be the topic for a podcast episode is that the focus this kind of one little lifecycle stage gets is that in most businesses, the MQL is the data point they use to say, this is a potential opportunity, let's start the sales process. And that's really an important thing. So I try to kind of get to the root of, like, where did the MQL actually come from? Because I was sort of wondering myself. And
whose fault is the MQL?
Yes, exactly. Who have we got to blame for the MQL? I want to know. Sadly, I didn't find a name, but I did find some people that suggested you could probably trace the MQL back to about 2003 and the launch of WordPress. Now, WordPress, as far as I could tell at least, didn't have a feature that created MQLs, but it did at its heart, for more or less the first time in the mainstream, allow marketers and non-technical users to manage their own content online, and with this came the content download. Now, downloadable content, I think, is in many ways really the first step in the MQL journey, as downloadable content, specifically gated content, content you access by filling in a form, created the problem that MQL set out to solve. And that problem was, of course, how do we measure the efficacy and indeed the ROI from content? So in essence, it kind of created the metrics that measure inbound marketing. And Inbound, yes, it was just about around then, probably. I think, as a HubSpot partner, I think certainly my understanding is that HubSpot more or less invented the term inbound probably around the time the business started, 2005, 2006. But for me, I really became aware of it kind of being more widely spread around 2010, 11. You know, this, I think, is when kind of content marketing really started to get into its stride. We had Salesforce. HubSpot was a bit more mature at that point. Sales operations was becoming much more of a function. And I think there was a bit of a period of time where we got this more rapid adoption of kind of the MQL and lifecycle stages in general. But, the problem, and I think we'll go on to talk problems, but it was never really properly defined during this period. MQL, lifecycle stage, marketing qualified lead, great. Well, it has this divisive little word in the middle of it, qualified. And of course, the problem with calling something qualified is that if you haven't defined that universally, and how could you? Well, qualified means different things to different people. And I suspect you would probably agree, Colin, that many in the sales community would also suggest the L is a pretty divisive part of the words MQL as well. So,
unless you sort of put the quotes around it, MQL or MQL.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think the parentheses are important there.
In my experience, there's certainly been a lot of sales and versus marketing, let's say, friction for the definition, amongst other issues. So what is your take on what the actual problem is with MQLs then?
Okay, so let's do the accusation audit. I suspect there could be quite a lot on it, but I've tried to sort of think about this and reduce it down as much as possible, but I know you're going to have extra things to add. But let's kick it off with the one I already mentioned. There's no industry standard definition of an MQL. That's not a thing that exists. There's probably some best practice starting to develop around it, but there certainly isn't a textbook definition. So every company makes up their own. And these definitions are rarely very well considered. Our perspective really is that, you need to think about in a systematic way, what is the MQL for? Where's it going to go? What's going to happen? And in the main, people don't. I think you could probably also say that things like tech stack limitations have an impact here. We go back to that kind of point earlier. What actually is an MQL? Well, it's the point that we're going to kick off a sales process. It's the point that we're using to say, this might be a prospect and we should go spend some sales resource on it. And of course, in the modern world of kind of sales and marketing, perhaps marketing particularly, there is so much tech out there. Tech stacks are huge. There are signals in all of these tech stacks, elements of point systems within a tech stack. And they should be, if they are part of the customer experience, part of the customer journey, informing the definition of the MQL. And in reality, they're not, more often than not. So we have these fairly simplistic binary views of what an MQL is, might be, and ultimately they're not good enough and they're not standardized enough. So that I think is really the crux of the matter. But another, for me, huge issue, and one that we just see so often in the B2B world, which really surprises me still, is that most companies measure MQLs at a contact level. I suspect there's people listening to this now saying, of course you measure MQLs at a contact level. That's what we've always done. Well, no, not in my opinion. And I'd happily read the comments afterwards in those people that are, listening to this in a place that takes comments. But for me, having MQLs measured at a contact level has a whole heap of issues inside it, and I know that we're going to explore those in a second. So I'll try and keep my powder dry from ranting about that for a little while longer. I think the third big problem, and it's kind of a byproduct of some of the stuff we were just talking about, right? Which is that MQLs are massively open to abuse. Most businesses have MQL targets. At face value, that seems like a great idea. Let's target putting enough in the top of the funnel. But you combine an MQL target with a poorly understood and perhaps slightly fluid definition of what an MQL actually is, and you've just got a recipe for rubbish. And in this sort of, I don't know, waterfall of accusations here, I think the biggest issue of all is that the composite of all of these things I've mentioned is that you put all of these poor quality, potentially very poor quality leads into a sales team, and you make them follow a set process, i.e. please go talk to them, and it just creates friction. It breaks down relationships, and ultimately it constrains the proper functioning of the growth team. And, you know, to be honest, that is really why this is such a sort of incendiary issue, even if it feels perhaps a quiet one. So yeah, it's a quite an impressive list of issues for a three-letter lifecycle stage, but I'm sure there's stuff you'd add to that.
Yeah, plenty. Where to start? Well, I guess a good place to start is saying I'm not going to name any names or single out any organization in particular. I've seen a lot of really stars and leaders wrestle with the same problems over and over. It's obviously an endemic and, I guess, to my mind, systemic issue where we see the same patterns forming over and over again. I guess to actually get into the meat of it, I would sort of kick off by saying that not all MQLs are equal, and this is, we're sort of getting to the root of this particular aspect of the problem. So if you ask any sales rep, SDR, or sales manager, they'll tell you that things like demo requests and a contact us form where somebody's literally written into you telling you they have a project and they want you to or, you know, if your product is Gartner's Magic Quadrant and someone's actually bothered to read that, generally speaking, that's a pretty strong buying signal. And you'll find that sales and sales development reps, etc., will be onto those in a flash with high expectations. And that will tend to be borne out by super high conversion rates, I think that the problem MQLs are, in the eyes of many sales reps, not really MQLs at all, though. In other words, they're quite a different thing from what I just described. And what I'm talking about here is like records of people, essentially just records of people who might have allegedly filled out a form and downloaded a piece of content, like a thought leadership piece. So I've actually worked in organizations where marketing will send over dozens or hundreds or literally even thousands of these, usually for like an SDR team to follow up on. Now, there's a few problems with this. So first of all, you were talking about that breakdown in the relationship and how MQLs kind of drives that wedge between these functions instead of bonding them together. You've usually already got to the point where that's broken down and nobody in sales or the SDR team is actually convinced that any of these should be MQLs. And when they look at them, they say, oh, it's just someone downloading a piece of content. I think justifiably, it's normal for a really large proportion of them to be non-ICP or non-target personas, bearing in mind usually one contact will be counted as one MQL. And I think most annoying of all for the reps who are having to follow this up is that it's very common for the person to have no recollection of ever having filled out such a form or of downloading the content. I mean, yeah, fair enough, you might forget reading a paper or filling in a form a few months ago. But I mean, in some cases, I've even spoken to someone at the same company who said, well, that person who supposedly downloaded this content 3 months ago has in fact been dead for 2 years, right?
I bet I can guess where some of those MQLs come from.
So you can imagine the sort of trust just tumbles at that point in the sales marketing relationship. And I guess the point I'm making is that these problem MQLs are very clearly not the same thing as the good MQLs that I described at the beginning. Like, you kind of reminded us in this that actually MQLs are essentially a life cycle stage. And these are very clearly not accounts in the same life cycle stage. So there's this kind of identity crisis in most B2B organizations where they're basically counted as if they are, and that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this really kind of points at the big overarching problem with the MQL is that if you don't get the basics right in defining them and almost as a byproduct, the point at which you bring sales in to work on those, then you're not going to get the desired outcome, which is opportunities and customers. And worse yet, because you're, as you say, you're sort of driving this wedge in through these kind of poorly defined, you know, leads in inverted commas that you're kind of making people, let's be honest, waste their time on, then you're breaking down that trust that any of these could be any good. And it's the sort of boy who cried wolf story, isn't it? You know, you're probably burning a load of prospects that maybe could have become customers just because you've lost the faith by sending too much rubbish, and you're damaging that sales marketing relationship itself in the process.
Yeah, indeed. Over and over again as well. So, Chris, I think what would be useful at this point is we can sort of, I'd be really interested to get your take on sort of unpacking some of these issues for us, starting with this big issue of the identity crisis of MQLs, and I guess the impact that that has on the organization as well, something we haven't really gone into as much yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for me, the root cause of this identity crisis is, as probably we you might expect, having listened to the intro, is that it's a, yeah, there is a systems issue here, that the people, persons, whoever, body defining whether something is an MQL or not, in fact, is not really considering anything beyond, and sorry, marketers, but beyond how we hit our target, probably that we've been given without much thought from someone reverse engineering a funnel based on how much money they'd like to make this year, on how many we've got to hit. So we think, okay, well, we've got to do a silly number. What is the minimum viable definition that we can get away with here in many cases? And it just doesn't consider the sort of organizational impact of what that definition is going to do. And I think this sort of identity crisis, this sort of systems issue manifests itself in a few different ways. So the basis of what it means to be marketing qualified is really the crux of this issue. You know, maybe it's the really is what is a lead, as actually is a more kind of open question. And it's one that I don't think very often gets asked to anyone in sales, which is a bit of a shocker, really. But you know, that comes back to this point of being a systems issue, that these decisions are so often being made in silos. They're so often being made with a sort of vertical alignment towards whatever goals have been set within the function. And it's not really considering what happens next. And what happens next, of course, actually is quite expensive human intervention in most cases. And, you know, for me, that really is, as we've discussed already, is the basis of the problem. In so many organizations, and I know you've worked in them, I've worked in them, I can honestly say I've never been complicit in making this true, but an MQL is a form fill. And nothing more than that. Of all the things that it could be, oh yeah, someone filled in a form for anything, that's an MQL.
In some cases, apparently a posthumous form fill.
Yeah, which is quite an impressive form fill. So, you know, we've got this sort of divisive nature of you're wasting my time because we haven't properly defined it. And the further up the funnel you create MQLs, ultimately, the more problems you're going to get. Because stripping back to this point, well, what should an MQL do? It should tell you that this organization in B2B world, and I think that comes back to my point about contacts that we'll no doubt come back to again, is got some intent to buy. You know, they are someone that is worth spending some time on, and someone that's form-filled by downloading an ebook, one person in one organization doing one thing, that is not an MQL. But in so many organizations, it is. You know, and actually, maybe this is slightly contentious, but in today's world, with the sort of advancements in kind of MarTech that we've got, you know, does an MQL have to have anything to do with a form fill at all? You know, it might sound sort of contrarian, I guess, but if we're talking about negative patterns, then the negative patterns we've focused on so far have been internal negative patterns the impact on sales, the impact on relationships, the impact on conversion rates. But what about the impact on the customer? Why do we have to hide everything of any value in our organization behind a form so that we can kind of create this lifecycle stage? It's a rubbish customer experience as well. So I think tech should be our friend here, and we really need to take a system view of what things are when we're kind of creating these definitions. And you know, that is the identity crisis for me in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I've seen some interesting approaches to getting around that problem. That's probably a discussion for another day about sort of content and how to I guess collect the metrics that you need to measure the impact of marketing there if you've not got everything gated behind a form fill wall, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So another big issue that I see here, I guess a very obvious one, is this misconception that MQLs should be delivered in as high a volume as possible. And I guess this leads to the MQL sort of abuse that you mentioned earlier. So in a nutshell, it's kind of the same everywhere, the ubiquitous problem. Marketing is usually targeted on volume, and sales teams are typically held responsible for the conversion rate, which means we've got a misaligned incentive structure and essentially no one wins.
Yeah, 100%. And this is one that, yes, you might have to hold me back on, but I think we can all agree that more is better when it comes to good quality leads. The more great quality leads we've got in an organization, the better. The more we're going to sell, the more we're going to convert, you know, the better everything is working. Happy days. But as soon as we start targeting MQL volume, then Goodhart's law kicks in, right? You know, quality is suffering because, in simple terms, if you target high, then people will play with the targeting and the classification until they get to their target. People will do what they're measured on for better or worse. And when you do this, nobody wins, particularly not, you know, the marketing budget. I was reading something from, who was it? I think the CEO of Gainsight, talking about the dark secret of MQLs when I was researching the show. And it's sort of this sort of open secret, I think, that MQLs are the easiest metric to manipulate. And because of that, they're really mostly, and there's always an and but, right? But mostly MQLs just become a vanity metric when you start putting a number on them. They certainly lose all ability to meaningfully project and forecast revenue based on conversion rates, even more so when you're doing that at contact level. And you just get this situation where as soon as, say, you know, MQL targets are trending in the wrong direction, it's getting near the end of the quarter. Oh my God, well, maybe let's just magically fix that. So let's pump a load of paid media money into PPC and content syndication and, you know, other expensive, low rent, high funnel channels where we can drive a load of quantity of MQL. So when we arrive at the uncomfortable, you know, quarter end meeting, well, marketing's all good, right? We hit our target. You know, what are you guys doing? And it's just ridiculous because you just, you know, money just goes up the wall. Relationships go down the toilet, to mix my metaphors. And just there are no winners here. And it's so easy to do, so people do it. And I think that's really, it's really contingent on growth organizations, on senior leadership, to make sure that we put the structures in place where this can't happen, because then you start putting the value back into the metric. So it's not, I think, MQLs intrinsically that are the issue. It's just this misuse, abuse, and misidentification that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we start to get into, I think, stuff that we'll cover in more detail later in the series about misalignment and what that actually means and what it looks like in practice, and then how metrics share the organization, I guess, two interconnected aspects there. You mentioned earlier about, we've mentioned a few times actually, about this issue of counting contacts as MQLs rather than accounts and sort of measuring intent within accounts. So what's the impact of that? Like, what's your take on that as an organizational impact?
Yeah, well, there's a few problems wrapped up in that. And it's such a common mistake to make, as I mentioned earlier. We're viewing the world through a sort of a B2B lens here. So in the world of B2B, well, guess what? The B is business. And that means that it is the account or the company, if you're in HubSpot land, and we're talking CRMs here, that that buys from you. It's not the individual. So it's an odd thing that the better your marketing is, the worse your conversion rate will be if you're counting at a contact level, because good looks like having really good spread across an account, right? Having lots of individuals from the same company engage with our company, that's a great buying signal. But two things happen: that if you do that, then those maybe 10, if you've done a great job, are going to turn into one. Well, that's a really poor MQL performance, isn't it? You know, dreadful. Only 10 MQLs to one sale. Well, no, because that's an exceptional marketing performance. And if we measured that at an account level, then that would be one, you know, one-to-one in the same abstract scenario there. So, you know, in the world of B2B, companies buy things, not individuals. So let's measure at a company level. And when we think kind of how complex B2B sales processes are, then yes, contacts are really, really important. Of course they are, but they don't turn into individual deals. So let's measure account level. And ultimately, let's then think about the contacts as a second order effect, as a secondary measure on top of that, because then we get a sensible conversion rate. We get sensible ability to use fairly standard metrics to forecast performance. And that's really important, because if we apply a standard conversion metric and we then start doing really well, well, actually, in terms of getting good account coverage, it's going to make the revenue unpredictable. And again, it goes back to them being suffering for doing a good job. So measure at an account level is really, really a key thing. And I think the sort of this secondary measurement of accounts, you know, that's not to say don't measure the performance of contacts at all, but there is a general, I think, consensus. People like Forrester push this, but ultimately it's been around in various guises for quite a long time in revenue operations teams that know what they're doing, which is thinking about buying groups, thinking about these signals of intent in an intelligent way. So if we have a standard decision-making unit within a target account, so we've got a good fit firmographic, you know, ICP, well, who are the people that are going to be impactful in that buying decision? If you're in a small business selling to small businesses, maybe it's two people. If you're in a very large enterprise account, maybe it's 10 people, but you'll know what that is in your organization. They're all a persona. So understanding buying group coverage, persona penetration, people call it different things, within an account. So I've got an MQL account that's an MQL, and actually then let's dig underneath the surface and understand how many people do we have coverage from within that account. And that then is a measure of MQL quality, and something that when you start enriching the MQL with that additional data, salespeople tend to get pretty excited about, because it's actually telling them something they can use to go sell and ultimately to justify their time investment or to measure their time investment based on sort of propensity to convert. So just that one simple change, you know, unlocks a lot of benefit just by seeing the world that way. And it's just so much more representative of the buying process that actually happens.
Yeah, I've actually seen some attempts at trying, maybe the metrics that marketing were measured on didn't really match up to this, but there was at least an attempt from them to kind of recognize this sort of buying group-centric strategy. It's just that that's the same organization where we had problems of sort of acquiring data from, you know, dead people downloading thought leadership pieces, which is probably not what I want to do after I go, presuming there's something afterwards.
Presuming there's still internet connection.
Still form fills. I think all of these problems, all of these issues really kind of boil down to creating one really big problem that we keep coming back to, and that is eroding this relationship between sales and marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, rubbish MQLs create rubbish relationships. And that relationship between sales and marketing, I mean, dare I say this, I'm sure there'll be people, if they're not from these two camps, that will vehemently disagree. But sales and marketing are the two most important teams in the business. There we go. I said it. But ultimately, if you're not growing, then the rest of it is going to struggle to get paid. So, and if you start killing that relationship, you're killing the business. I don't think that's an overstatement.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Instead of being the two most important teams, they should be thinking as the one most important team. I think it's kind of at the nub of this.
100%.
So I guess for this sort of second part of the show, it'd be good to actually talk about what can we do about this, because otherwise I guess it's a bit depressing, isn't it? So let's talk solutions. Like, what have you got for us, Chris?
Cool. Well, you'll be pleased to know I do have some solutions. So let's dive into a few of those. I mean, as always, as boring as it is to say, the solutions, it depends. Please don't blithely roll out all of these in your organization without a thought to how they fit. But these are all very much solutions that form part of fixing the problem that so many organizations have that we've just been talking about. So we talked about the Q and the L being somewhat of a misnomer. And the problem with that, as we've said, is that it creates misexpectation. So really, really simplistically, you know, this is not exactly going to be a bombshell here, but sort out what a lead means to you and therefore what you need to do to qualify whether it is one. You know, work it backwards from the L to the Q to then the marketing. And that is something that will solve so many of the problems that we've described today. It's just ultimately getting a line behind what a lead is and how we can tell what a lead is based on the signals that we have available to us within the tech stack, within the campaigns, within the, you know, the environment, the system that we find ourselves within. I think that a part of that sort of understanding the qualification framework, and I think this is qualification framework is actually quite an important point here. In sales, it is a very, very commonly understood thing we're using MEDPIC, we're using BANT. Well, hopefully you're not using BANT, but you know, there are a lot of frameworks out there. Scotsman. That is something that has an element of universal understanding in a way that MQLs just don't. So I would be an advocate for either extending your qualification framework up the funnel, if you can do so in a reasonable way, or certainly just making up a qualification framework for your business and sticking to it staunchly and making sure everyone understands what it is. So you can then start engineering those solutions into automation and whatever other technology that you've got, so that we can start creating those MQLs in a way that is intelligent, that genuinely tells us whether that is a lead that has intent to buy, even if that intent is still relatively early. But as long as everyone is happy with what the definition of a lead is, and you're managing to engineer the qualification of that in, then a lot of these problems are going to go away. That misexpectation goes away. You don't get the problem MQLs you were talking about, because you've only got one kind of MQLs, because they have to meet the framework. So, you know, the Q and the L, fixing that, and then make sure the marketing matches it. And I think that actually in itself is probably a solution to talk about, is that the content and general conversion strategy of the marketing team has a lot to answer for. As we've said, the role of content should be to help define the purchase intent of the prospect. And it should be used to power MQL creation and insight. So often, it seems to me at least, and certainly where we've gone into organizations and picked up the pieces, we've got all this content. Yeah, we're churning out 5 blogs a month, 5 blogs a week, God knows what. Well, there's never a plan behind them. You know, it's something that someone thought might be interesting, something that someone wants to write about, something that someone has fed into ChatGPT, perhaps more latterly. And it doesn't have a plan behind it for ascertaining intent. And I think that if you don't have a content strategy that is rooted in its ability to tell you something based on the interaction and consumption of that content about the amount of intent the consumer has, there's something wrong with the content strategy. So, you know, I guess it's an extension point from the point above. You know, that's the let's focus on the M of MQL and make sure that the marketing actually enables us to do the Q. And I think that that is very, very rarely considered in my experience. Now, tell me I'm wrong. Perhaps everyone's doing this and we just have a poor view of the world from perhaps some places that we've been brought into work.
Past trauma.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, get the definitions right, get the qualification framework right, agree what a lead is and make sure your content marketing strategy or indeed your marketing strategy full stop. Going back to my point about does everything have to be gated, make sure that that works. I think the next solution that I would offer is that it's really all about layers. You know, much like this change of autumn weather that we're having right now, layers definitely help. And when we're thinking about purchase intent, then we really should be powering our MQL creation process with insight from many places. We've already said that the worst kind of MQL is a single form fill that's just fired to sales, right? So, but that's not to say that there is no validity in a form fill, but you need to be layering that data up with other things. So let's say that we've already accepted we need to be doing this at an account level. Well, if an MQL is happening at an account level, then one person doing one thing isn't an MQL, in my opinion. However, maybe two people doing the same thing might be an MQL. Not saying it is, but it certainly might be. Then five people doing that definitely is. The same person may be downloading three things that live in a sequence that are all thematically grouped around one service or product offering. You know, that's an MQL, I would say. But going back to the, or at least moving away from this kind of consideration of consumption of content being the be-all and end-all, which it certainly isn't. Well, now tools to measure intent, things like Bombora, are now getting even more accessible. Tools to de-anonymize website visitors are getting even more accessible. Signals-based data points out there in the ether, like job changes and recent funding rounds and you know, changes of senior management, whatever. You know, there are loads and loads of data points out there. And any one of those data points by itself probably isn't that interesting. But you get someone that's got some Bombora intent for your product and they've been on your website and, you know, one person did download one thing, but actually because you've got one first party data point, but you've got a few third party data points, like, you know, they've got some Bombora intent and we can see some web traffic from people on that domain. Well, guess what? That one thing, which we've said, never turn one form fill from one person into an MQL. Well, start layering on some of that third party data and go ahead and do that, because that probably is quite interesting. And leveraging these kind of technologies, leveraging our overall understanding of the account within CRM, like one person did one thing, but 2 years ago we did a £1 million deal with them and we've got 20 people in the CRM that we know. Well, maybe that is the green shoots of something that you need to jump on and you need to prioritize that through the account team or whatever it was. But just take a broad view, take a layered view, put stuff on top of each other and use multiple data points to construct your MQL. And we do it internally. And I think it's fair to say, Colin, that, you know, with you heading up the growth team, there is much more enthusiasm for things that happen like that than there are for form fills.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Chris, just checking the time there, do you think it's a good time to go to our sort of final thoughts about takes for the episode?
Let me do a few more. I'll try and rattle off a few quick ones, because I've been a bit languid in getting through my list that I've written down of things to do. But let me fire through a few out then. So presentation of information to sellers. I think that's a really, really key thing. Ensure that the MQL tells the story of why it's an MQL. without them needing to go digging. I think it's really like brilliant at the basic stuff, but if you present a contact record to someone and say, this is an MQL, well, that means that you've got two things happening, which are you're going to get a pretty rubbish unpersonalized response from the seller, or you're going to spend the seller's going to spend a load of their time working out why the hell this thing's hit them. So front that end information up front and center and make it easy. I think going back to sort of the theme of brilliant at the basics, filtration, that is really, really key as well. You mentioned earlier getting a load of, you know, MQLs in inverted commas that are not the right ICP, they're not the right personas, they're the wrong firmographics, they're possibly dead. Well, let's do that filtration before anything hits sales. So some very simple automation to just say, or some simple data enrichment to say, this is the right size company in the right place. The persona, the job title that's being used more or less makes sense. And we've done some other sort of contact validity work in terms of this is not mickey@mouse.com or whatever. So getting that rubbish out will just go a long way to preserving the relationship, because you're not affecting confidence in the selling community by giving them stuff that is patently rubbish and you just needed to look at it or run a process to realize that it was. Definitely talked about accounts, not contacts. And I think overlaying that sort of buying group level of data that I mentioned earlier on top of that account level MQL, that is a great way to get reps excited about going and hunting them down when we know that we seemingly have a sort of groundswell of intent that's happening in a particular account. I think that we talked about this sort of easy to manipulate point, and just making the definitions manipulation proof. Now, that really just comes down from strongly and well codifying things, getting this qualification framework. I mentioned commonly understood and in practice and in production, so we can't start shifting that definition because no one's ever written the definition down. And here's a good one. Don't set stupid targets in the first place that require manipulation.
Controversial stuff.
Yeah, controversial, crazy ideas. Like just because you want to double revenue next year, and mathematically speaking, that would require you to get 10,000 MQLs a month, that probably doesn't mean it's a good target. So maybe just don't do that to your growth team. If you're a CEO listening, I would encourage you to take that advice on board. And okay, let's go for one final one. A genuine what to do instead. Well, you could just not call them MQLs. A better name, I think, is quite a good solution. I've seen a few bandied around over the years. I quite like marketing engaged accounts. I think it's a lot less divisive than qualified and leads. It really just shows that they are engaged with the stuff we're doing at the top of the funnel. And that doesn't mean don't apply a qualification framework, don't do all the things I've just said, but maybe let's just call them what they are, which is they're engaged with marketing. And they've hit our criteria, so let's pass them over for some action. The other things that I have seen, I was about to say working, I've certainly seen in production, some of these are probably a bit new in my direct experience to say these work better than MQLs, but behavior scores is quite an interesting one that we certainly see happening more and more now, sometimes powered by AI, sometimes powered by sort of algorithmic logic or simply just filters and criteria. But they've done enough stuff that they've tripped over a score threshold, and let's make them an MQL. So I think that is quite an interesting one because it is quite formulaic. It is not about interpretation. They simply have to have done these multiple things in some order to hit a score to make that interesting to follow up by sales. So I think that's a good alternative entirely to the sort of other process. Content membership is another interesting one as well. I think in the sort of cookie-less world that we are sort of careering towards, I think that there are some technical challenges potentially with this one, but rather than gating everything, just gate everything in one go So, you know, make someone a content member, get them behind the scenes, get them into the community, potentially, you know, that community-led growth function is really like content membership, and then track consumption of the content within the community, within the, you know, the area. So we've got that, again, still a very content-centric view of the world. And I've used the phrase content a lot because I think it's representative of the reality of right now for most businesses. It is categorically not what I'm saying is the be-all and end-all of creating MQLs, but tracking consumption, tracking touch points, tracking engagement, and not asking for a form fill every time. I think that is another great view of the world and potentially also plays into the behavior score thing. So I will stop at this point. And yeah, let's maybe do some summing up.
I'm glad I let you finish on that one, Chris. I tell you what, I'll go ahead and let you get your breath back there. I'd give you some of my sort of outtakes from the episode. So first of all, it was super interesting sort of unpacking these major issues with MQLs, these negative organizational patterns. And I really liked what you had to say about the fixes or the solutions. But what occurred to me, and it goes back to what we're talking about at the beginning and last week as well, is that these are systems issues and we need to kind of look at the solution holistically. So we can't just say, okay, we're going to redefine what an MQL is or how we measure this. There's a whole system that needs to be built around this. And I think we'll go into that over the next few weeks. There needs to be true alignment between sales and marketing on this. And that's at both a sort of technological level and a sort of process level. And also in terms of how they're measured and how you measure success. And success has, what success looks like has to be the same for each. I think that's something would be really great to go into on the next episode about alignment. And then I guess later in the series, as we get into how metrics shape the organization, and I guess that's part of what was at the root of this MQL problem. And lastly, just slightly away from that, is that we need to be thinking, we need to talk about intent, really, and about how we measure intent. And I think that buying group discussion that's kind of come across a few times during this episode is something worth digging into as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think actually after having such a systems theory heavy episode last week, we probably haven't touched that much on systems theory this week. And I sort of alluded to the systematic nature of the problem. But I would echo what you've said and say that actually taking a systems view of how we start defining how we operationalize the use of MQLs within the organization is really, really key. So thinking about those interfaces, both with sales, with technology, you know, integrations, processes, all of that has a fundamental bearing on the success or failure of the application of MQLs. And I think that that's the important bit, is the application of MQLs, not the MQL itself that is the problem. And I think that winding back out of that a little bit, having a common view of what a lead means, you know, in the organization, and the point at which sales or sellers are going to be interested in getting a hold of that and doing a really, really great job and putting their all into it because they have belief that that's something that is going to be beneficial. So managing that trust through common understanding and then building a qualification framework to start defining what those MQLs are, that is based on achieving that definition of the lead through the data points that are available, and then making sure that our marketing, you know, that reverse engineering of the MQL from the L to the Q to the M, I think is quite a good thing to bear in mind. And then I think finally, I would say that not thinking about content as the be-all and end-all of the MQL, thinking about the opportunities presented by either the tech stack that you do have or the tech stack that you could have, because this stuff is getting so much cheaper than it ever was, and making sure that we're building up that definition dynamically, that we're thinking in layers, we're viewing those layers through the lens of the account and then building that intent out from as many data points as we can get. And having that as the having a strong relationship with the qualification framework that I just mentioned. So I think those are probably my three.
Okay, great. I think we should leave it there for this week. Looking forward to getting stuck into alignment next week. I won't say too much about that just now. I think we've already kind of touched on some of the issues and we'll expand on that then. So I guess all that's left is to say that the Growth System is brought to you by RevSpace, which is an applied growth consultancy that connects B2B organizations with the future of growth, with consultancy, education, and also delivery services. Just like to finish by saying, if you enjoyed the episode, it'd be really helpful if you could follow and rate the podcast. That's all from us at the moment. Hopefully see you next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you next week.